so many of the Czechs who were professionals in some way. They were artists, they were scholars, they were professional people, lawyers, medical people, and they were part of the Jewish roundup. And so they were sent to Terezin. It's amazing how many of them had never heard of Terezin. They were Czechs. And it was just 40 miles up the road, but it was a place that they didn't know about. It was built in the 1780s. So they threw them into a camp. They took the people who lived up there, took them out, and made this into a ghetto concentration camp. From 1939 on, the scholars and the artists really hadn't worked. Now, they were forbidden. Jews couldn't perform. They couldn't go to school. They couldn't teach. They couldn't be published. If they were artists, they couldn't exhibit. It was just a life of vacuum. But here they meet up in Terezin, so many of them who knew each other from the artistic and professional life. And somehow, without ever having a meeting and deciding on this, the world that they knew in Prague, the professional life, the stimulating life, the artistic world, started to kind of regenerate. And so the composers formed themselves into, I know you won't believe me when I tell you this, they called themselves the New Music Studio. Now, okay, in L.A., Chicago, New York, all the cities will have four or five new music studios, but in a concentration camp in Czechoslovakia. And there were about 20 composers there. So there were conductors, and they wanted to put together choirs and small ensembles if they could. There were artistic events of all sorts. There were full operas and opera scenes, Tosca, Fledermaus, Magic Flute, and of course the pinnacle of Czech opera, the Bartered Bride of Smetana, which is still going strong today. Some 35, 40 performances of the Bartered Bride in the camp. And I've seen the score that Schechter used, Raphael Schechter, who was one of the chief conductors. And it says on the front page the name of the woman who is ill today, substituted by whatever, you know. All I can say is that it was a more than a blossoming of the arts and humanities in Terezin, but an explosion. What happened was they needed to do this. They just needed to have a world, even in this decrepit place, that represented the one that they left. They could not believe that this was their reality. Their reality had to be the arts and humanities. In addition to 1,000 concerts that took place over the years of Terezin's existence as a concentration camp, in addition to that, there were some 2,400 lectures by 530 prisoners on every conceivable subject, the most popular of which was literature. 300 lectures on literature, because these people read, but they couldn't bring books because that would mean one less pair of shoes or two less sweaters or no tin cans or whatever it was. So they loved to hear from people who wrote or who taught literature or who had read and could speak about this with great articulation.
To what extent were the activities secret from the Nazis who ran the camp, and when did they become more above ground?
The first two commandants didn't want that. The first two commandants just wanted everybody to work, sleep, and die. That's all. That was it. And so even though there were sub rosa action, there were discussion groups, and there were some performances, and there were some singing and some playing over this little instrument. It wasn't quite a piano. It was one of those things that had pedals and had two octaves. And there was a piano up top, however, and they had to trade that off. And there was some darn good pianists there. I mean, people very, very well known at the time. Once the first two commandants had left, the third commandant, a man named Rahm, R-A-H-M, he comes in. And he's drunk most of the time. He's just sort of out of the scene. But he didn't want to go to the Russian front. So what he wanted was peace and order more than anything else. So he said to his underlings, okay, we know this is going on. Let them do it. If it takes their mind off of hunger, if it takes their mind off the fact that they're bitter cold and they're not getting medical attention. I'm sure he didn't say those things. If it took their mind off of the lack of sustenance and substantive lives, then let them. And so that's when it came above board. And they actually let the prisoners organize an organization called the Free Time Activity, and that was scheduled. Who was going to perform when? Who could use the piano for practice when? And all of this went on because there was a great demand for performing and there was a great demand for using the one piano they had. Eventually, they brought in a second piano, but the first piano didn't have the front leg. It was a baby grand, didn't have the front leg, so they had to build boxes to hold the thing up. And there was one guy in the camp who was a dentist who brought with him, for some reason, nobody seems to know, he brought with him a pair of pliers. I guess he thought, well, in case he's got to pull some teeth or something, because they didn't know where they were going or what kind of life they were going to have. But anyway, Rafi Schechter, the conductor, taught him how to use the pliers to try to tune the piano.
What was the nature of attendance at these performances by the Germans who were actually running the camp?
It wasn't important that they came. It wasn't important that they heard it or got the message. It was important that these people did it. That's the important thing. This was their chance to shake their fist. And there's one Latin phrase in the Mass itself that motivated Schechter and was incredibly important to everybody who sang. I can never remember it all, so I've got it written down in front of me because I don't want to be without it. It simply says, this is in the Dies Irae section of the Mass, Quicquid latet apparebit, nil in nultum remanebit. Whatever is hidden shall become evident, and nothing shall remain unavenged. That's what they were singing.
And the singers memorized it.
Well, they had no choice because he had the only score, so he taught it by rote. And so one night he'd get the men. He had 150 people, volunteers. And you wonder, my God, they're working 12, 14 hours a day, and this is slave labor, and they get very little rest, and they have to work 8 days before they get a half a day off. What in the world are they doing, giving their free time to going down into this cold, airless basement to learn the Verdi Requiem, a work steeped in the Catholic liturgy, in a place where everyone's in jail for being Jewish, everyone's in prison for being Jewish? What is this all about? And it was all about this. It was all about the dignity and the power and the strength of the text, and it was about the beauty of the music.